division, Democrats are saying that President Trump can't leave without some measure of accountability for his role in inciting the mob that did seize the Capitol last Wednesday.
And Domenico, help us understand, too, what the Democrats are trying to balance. And do they want a second impeachment trial to come at the expense of delaying the job the Biden administration has to do within the first 100 days, particularly given the fact that COVID-19 deaths are occurring at an all-time high each and every day?
Yeah, it's quite staggering. 23,000 people, 23,000 Americans died this past week from coronavirus. That is a stunning figure. We're approaching 380,000 or so who have died from coronavirus, and it doesn't look like the rates of infection are, you know, reducing at all. In fact, they're increasing at this point. So yes, the incoming Biden administration say that the focus that they want is to be on coronavirus, how to get people relief, how to get vaccinations out, how to get people financial help. That's a key part of this, obviously. At the same time, you know, Biden is trying to walk this line and saying, you know, it's up to Congress to hold this president accountable. Of course, he has said himself, I think that he should be removed from office as quickly as possible, considering I ran against him, you know, and wanted to defeat him. So he's not at this point, you know, completely saying don't do it. But at the same time, he needs some of those big positions to have people sworn in. He wants to sort of split the day and see if there's a way for the Senate to be able to, you know, operate on some of the business of coronavirus and confirmations in the mornings, and then have the Senate do the trial in the afternoon. Quite a long day, and there's only so much time in the day.
Let's turn to NPR's Nina Totenberg. We've mentioned this is a momentous day, a day of history. Nina, you have seen a lot of history. I wonder what your thoughts are on what we're about to witness today.
Well, I've seen a lot of history, and I've, you know, seen many more impeachments than I, or attempted impeachments, and than I would care to, as a citizen, enjoy. But this is really a whole new animal. From the beginning of his presidency, Donald Trump has been a whole new animal, never afraid to bust norms, never afraid to ignore the rules, whether they were the ethics rules that were laid down or the accepted practices of releasing your taxes or violating that particular promise.
I'd almost forgotten. They still haven't been released. He's about to leave office.
Right, they have not still been released. Mm-hmm. And it was, in fact, one of the things that in the impeachment process, the first impeachment process, that Congress was trying to get to see whether there were any quid pro quos involved. So this is, again, he is on the way out the door being a different animal. And because he has told what we referred to last night over and over again as the big lie and managed to sell it to a substantial portion of his base, it has become more than a lie, more than norm busting. Mm-hmm. It has become an act of potential sedition. And we still don't know whether this was a crowd that he egged on, lit the fire, as Liz Cheney said, invited them to Washington, lit the fire, she said, whether he did that on purpose or whether there was more to it. We don't know the answer to those questions. And in that sense, it's not just historic. It's incredibly on the edge of what is going to happen to this country in the future.
Yeah, certainly in the weeks and months and even years ahead. Michelle?
Kelsey, I want to go back to you, Kelsey Snell, congressional correspondent, because we've been seeing some extraordinary images, those of us who are kind of watching various video feeds from the Capitol, of military police signing out heavy weapons, I'd just like to tell us what you know about the environment on the Capitol and the environment surrounding these lawmakers as they take up these issues.
Well, yesterday was the first time that there were magnetometers at the entrances to the House floor. That is uncommon. Members typically just enter the House floor, come and go as they please. They often actually go around the security screening to get into the Capitol itself. But now all of the entrances to get to the floor require them to go through through some sort of security screening. That we saw last night that there were clashes between some Republicans and members of the Capitol Police, people saying that they felt that it violated their constitutional rights to enter the floor and have to go through security to do so. My colleague Claudia Grisales has navigated through all of the security this morning to get there. She said that she had to be dropped off several blocks away and was not able to, you know, enter in the normal way. She said that there are Capitol Police and armed guards throughout the building. She said that there are barricades set up several blocks from the Capitol, and people are checking badges for anyone to enter even the perimeter, even by foot, and vehicles are being turned away in long lines, snaking through traffic. She said it's just an extraordinary level of security that we just never see around the Capitol. For people who don't know, the Capitol is a public building. It is, as much as it is a workplace for Congress and journalists like myself, it's a place where, you know, people can come and see the beautiful artwork and the architecture and see democracy in action. Frequently, we share the hallways while we're interviewing lawmakers with tourists who are, you know, coming to just see the action on the House or the Senate floor, or just to watch lawmakers mill through the building. That is not the atmosphere anymore, and there will be long-term conversations about the consequences for public access to this House of Democracy.
I think anybody listening to our conversation who may have visited Washington, D.C. on a school trip or, you know, just for a vacation, who has had the experience of visiting the Capitol and just sort of wandering through it, maybe even having a picnic or throwing a ball or even sledding, you know, on the lawn or listening to a concert, would be shocked by what they're seeing today. Not to mention the fact that this is also in a residential neighborhood. Just to give you a sense of the sort of the terror and the anxiety that many people experienced in what happened last week. But to set the table for what happened, I want to talk about what happened last night. I mean, last night, the Congress debated a resolution to try to compel Vice President Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment. It was a bit of a preview as to what we might hear today. And Representative Jamie Raskin, who a Democrat from Maryland, who's been tasked as the assigned to be the lead manager of the impeachment trial in his other life, he's a constitutional law professor, responded to a question posed by Andy Biggs, the Republican of Arizona. And this is what Representative Raskin had to say.
Mr. Speaker, the gentleman reasonably poses the question, why are we doing this? We think that the President of the United States constitutes a clear and present danger to the Republic and to our people. For example, on the white supremacist websites that helped to build the president's mob, they are now calling for a return engagement on the days of January 19th and 20th. They are calling again for an attack on the Capitol, and they're calling again for the state legislatures now in 50 states to be surrounded. What will the attitude be of the President of the United States? Will he give them aid and comfort? Will he wink at them? Will he send them positive tweets and messages calling them patriots? Also on extreme right-wing websites, they are calling for the president to pardon the organizers of the armed violent insurrection that took place in this body not even a week ago. And what if the president decides to pardon them? We know this president is not living up to the most minimal duties of his office. That's why we are doing this, to protect the public.
And there were some Republicans, North Carolina Republican Dan Bishop, specifically, who felt that it was, I believe he referred to it as the attempt to invoke the 25th Amendment. He called it an attempt to intimidate and bully Vice President Pence, and rejected that idea. Of course, the most powerful rejection for the possibility came from Vice President Pence himself, who said that he just wasn't going to do that. We will note that I gather the rules are being presented now on the House, and Representative McGovern of Massachusetts, who is the chairman of the Rules Committee, is speaking. And debate, of course, will begin
Wednesday,
soon. Here's Representative McGovern.
Gathered here to fulfill our constitutional duty, tallying the Electoral College victory of President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris after a free and fair election. This is largely a ceremonial role for the Congress, one that sends a message to the world that democracy in the United States persists. But at a rally just a mile and a half down Pennsylvania Avenue, Donald Trump and his allies were stoking the anger of a violent mob. A member of this very body proclaimed on that stage, "Today is the day American patriots start taking down names and kicking ass." Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, called for trial by combat. Then Donald Trump told the crowd, "We're going to have to fight much harder. You will never take back our country with weakness." Even though, according to his own administration, that this election was the most secure in our history, Donald Trump repeated his big lie that this election was an egregious assault on democracy. Vice President Pence, he said, was going to have to come through for us. Trump then told this mob to walk down to the Capitol. The signal was unmistakable. These thugs should stage a coup so Donald Trump can hang on to power. The people's will be damned. This beacon of democracy became the site of a vicious attack. Rioters chanted, "Hang Mike Pence," as a noose and gallows were built a stone's throw from the Capitol steps. Capitol police officers were beaten and sprayed with pepper spray. Attackers hunted down lawmakers to hold them hostage or worse. Staff barricaded doors. People sent text messages to their families to tell them they loved them. They thought they were saying goodbye, Mr. Speaker. This was not a protest. This was an insurrection. This was a well-organized attack on our country that was incited by Donald Trump. Domestic terrorists broke into the United States Capitol that day, and it's a miracle more people didn't die. As my colleagues and I were being evacuated to safety, I never, ever will forget what I saw when I looked into the eyes of those attackers right in the Speaker's lobby there. I saw evil, Mr. Speaker. Our country came under attack, not from a foreign nation, but from within. These were not protesters. These were not patriots. These were traitors. These were domestic terrorists, Mr. Speaker. And they were acting under the orders of Donald Trump. Now, some of my colleagues on the other side have suggested that we just move on from this horror. But to gloss over it would be an abdication of our duty. Others on the Republican side have talked about unity. But we can't have unity without truth and without accountability. And I'm not about to be lectured by people who just voted to overturn the results of a free and fair election. America was attacked, and we must respond, even when the cause of this violence resides at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Each of us took an oath last week. It wasn't to a party, and it wasn't to a person. We vowed to defend the Constitution. The actions of Donald Trump have called each of us to fulfill that oath today. I pray that we rise to this responsibility, because every moment Donald Trump is in the White House, our nation, our freedom is in danger. He must be held to account for the attack on our Capitol that he organized and he incited. I solemnly urge my colleagues to support this rule and the underlying article. The damage this building sustained can be repaired, Mr. Speaker. But if we don't hold Donald Trump accountable, the damage done to our nation could be irreversible. I reserve the balance of my time.
Gentleman from Massachusetts reserves. Gentleman from Oklahoma is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Now we're hearing from Congressman Tom Cole, representative from Oklahoma. He's the ranking member of the Rules Committee.
God's blessing and protection on you, for my friend Mr. McGovern, for all who come to this chamber today to speak and to vote, for our wonderful staff that makes this possible, and most especially for the men and women of the Capitol Police and the other affiliated law enforcement agencies that are here to protect everybody and to make sure that this proceeding can go forward. With that, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the gentleman from Massachusetts, my very good friend, distinguished chairman of the Rules Committee, Mr. McGovern, for yielding me the customary 30 minutes, and I yield myself such time as I may consume. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, today is a sad day for all of us, for me personally, for the Rules Committee, for the entire House of Representatives, and most certainly for the American people. For the second time in 13 months, we're meeting to discuss the impeachment of the President of the United States. Our meeting today does not arise in a vacuum and comes at what I hope and pray is the end of a tumultuous period for our country. Less than 1 week ago, Congress met to certify the results of the 2020 presidential election. What started out as peaceful protest turned into a riot as an untold number of individuals stormed the Capitol building. Six people died as a result of this mob. And it's only by the grace of God and the brave acts of the U.S. Capitol Police, the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police, the FBI, the ATF, and other responding agencies that there was not more bloodshed. Violent acts such as these have no place in our republic. These shocking and sobering events rest high on our minds today, as well they should. Certainly January 6, 2021 will live in my memory as the darkest day during my time of service as a member of this House. After these grave events, we as a nation and as an institution have an opportunity to come together. President Trump has conceded the 2020 election. Congress has certified the results of the election. And next Wednesday, President-elect Biden will be sworn in as the President of the United States. Congress and the nation can move forward knowing that the political process was completed as designed and that the constitutional framework that has governed our republic since 1789 held firm. But instead of moving forward as a unifying force, the majority in the House is choosing to divide us further. With only a week to go in his term, the majority is asking us to consider a resolution impeaching President Trump. And they do so knowing full well that even if the House passes this resolution, the Senate will not be able to begin considering these charges until after President Trump's term ends. Mr. Speaker, I can think of no action the House can take that's more likely to further divide the American people than the action we are contemplating today. Emotions are clearly running high, and political divisions have never been more apparent in my lifetime. We desperately need to seek a path forward, healing for the American people. So it's unfortunate that a path to support healing is not the path the majority's chosen today. Instead, the House is moving forward erratically with a truncated process that does not comport with the modern practice and that will give members no time to contemplate the serious course of action before us. In every modern impeachment inquiry, an investigation and committee action has preceded bringing an impeachment resolution to the floor. In part, this is to ensure that members have the full facts, the opportunity to engage expert witnesses, and have a chance to be heard. It also provides due process to the President of the United States. And again, in every modern impeachment inquiry, the President has been given an opportunity to be heard in some form or another. This is necessary in order to ensure that the American people have confidence in the procedures the House is following. It's also necessary not because of the President's inappropriate and reckless words are deserving of defense, but because the presidency itself demands due process in the impeachment proceedings. Unfortunately, the majority's chosen to race to the floor with a new article of impeachment, foregoing any investigation, any committee process, or any chance for members to fully contemplate this course of action before proceeding. Professor Jonathan Turley is correct when he called this a, quote, dangerous snap impeachment, an impeachment that effectively would go to a vote without the deliberation or inquiries of the traditional hearing. Professor Turley also noted that, quote, the damage caused by the rioters this week was enormous. However, it will pale in comparison to the damage from a new precedent of a snap impeachment, unquote. If the majority is seeking consensus, this is hardly the way to create it. The majority's failing to provide the House with an opportunity to review all the facts, which are still coming to light, to discuss all the evidence, to listen to scholars, to examine the witnesses, and to consider precedents. This is not the type of robust process we have followed for every modern impeachment, and the failure to do so does a great disservice to this institution and to this country. Mr. Speaker, I can think of nothing that will cause further division more than the path the majority is now taking. Rather than looking ahead to a new administration, the majority is again seeking to settle scores against the old one. Rather than seeking to heal America, they are seeking to divide us more deeply. And rather than following the appropriate processes the House has used in every modern impeachment, majorities rushing to the floor, tripping all over themselves in their rush to impeach the president a second time. What's worse, though the majority seems to believe that this course of action is self-evident, and that's simply not the case. I have to tell them it's not. Members that have reviewed the same conduct and have come to dramatically different conclusions. Legal scholars like Professor Turley and Professor Alan Dershowitz, both of whom condemned the president's statements, believe that his statements are not impeachable. I know other scholars have different points of view. Given this difference of opinion, shouldn't we have a better process than this? Shouldn't we have a chance to examine witnesses, discuss the matter with legal scholars, and consider this in committee? On a matter as grave and consequential as impeachment, shouldn't we follow the same process we have used in every modern impeachment rather than rushing to the floor? On behalf of generations of Americans to come, we need to think more clearly about the consequences of our actions today. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, there is no reason to rush forward like this, other than the very obvious fact that there are only 7 days left until a new president takes office. But what's worse, as Professor Dershowitz has pointed out, because of the Senate's rules, the case cannot come to trial in the Senate until 1 p.m. on January the 20th, 1 hour after President Trump leaves office. This is an ill-advised course, in my opinion, Mr. Speaker. Even Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat, agrees. Senator Manchin is quoted this week as having said, quote, "I think this is so ill-advised for Joe Biden to be coming in, trying to heal the country, trying to be the president of all the people when we're going to be so divided and fighting again. Let the judicial system do its job," unquote. So what then is the point of the rush to impeach? We are coming off a horrific event that resulted in 6 deaths. We have an opportunity to move forward, but we cannot if the majority insists on bringing the country through the trauma of another impeachment. It will carry forward into the next president's term, ensuring that he will struggle to organize his administration. What's worse, it will continue to generate the bitterness so many of us have opposed. Why put us through that when we can't actually resolve this before the end of the president's term? Mr. Speaker, I think my colleagues in the majority need to think about this more soberly. We need to recognize we are following a flawed process. We need to recognize that people of goodwill can differ. We need to recognize that while the House may be done with this matter after today's vote, it will not be done for the country, it will not be done for the Senate, and it will not be done for the incoming Biden administration. The House's action today will only extend the division longer than necessary. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I would note that there are other remedies that can be pursued. The President is expected to face litigation over his role in last Wednesday's events. There will be criminal proceedings against the perpetrators, and I hope all of those who stormed the Capitol will be brought to justice. And some members have proposed an alternative procedure, censoring the president, which could garner significant bipartisan support in the House. I do not think impeachment is a wise course, Mr. Speaker. I would urge my friends in the majority to reconsider. There's still time to choose a different path, one that leads to reconciliation and hope for a better and brighter days. With that, I urge opposition to the rule, and I reserve the balance of my time.
Gentleman from Oklahoma Reserve, gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to insert in the record the powerful statement by Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who is the chair of the House Republican Caucus,
Massachusetts.
"I will vote to impeach the president.
Without objection.
And I just want to be clear about one thing. If we vote to impeach the president today and we send it over to the Senate, there is nothing to prevent the Senate from taking it up immediately if Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell decides that he wants to proceed, number one. Number two, we all want to talk about unity. I can't think of anything that would unify this country more if there was a big bipartisan vote
in favor of impeachment. Every second that this president remains in office is a danger to this country and to the world. We have no idea what he is capable of doing, whether he will pardon these terrorists, whether he will go to war. So I would urge all my colleagues on both sides to support this rule and the impeachment resolution. I yield 1 minute to the gentlewoman from California, Ms. Chu.
When he's recognized for 1 minute.
Last week, I hid in an office for hours, terrified to open the door because I did not know if a rioter was on the other side ready to attack, kidnap, or murder me. But my experiences were just the tip of the iceberg. The U.S.
This is Representative Judy Chu of California.
Was targeted, besieged, and ransacked on January 6th by a murderous mob holding a noose for Vice President Pence and targeting Speaker Pelosi. Their rampage resulted in destruction and 5 people dead. We were attacked by terrorists, but this time the terrorists were radicalized right here in the United States. Worse, they were radicalized by the president, who intentionally lied to his supporters that the election was stolen and then told them when to come to D.C., where to protest, and who to direct their anger at. The need to remove this president could not be more urgent. He is too dangerous to remain in office. Donald Trump must be held accountable. He must be impeached.
Gentleman yields. Gentleman from Massachusetts reserves. Gentleman from Oklahoma is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I yield myself such time as I may consume.
Gentleman's recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we defeat the previous question, I'll offer an amendment to the rule to immediately bring up a resolution.
This is Mr. Cole. This is Representative Cole of Oklahoma again.
Terrorist attack on the United States Capitol. This proposed bipartisan commission will be tasked with examining and reporting upon the terror attack on our Capitol that occurred last Wednesday. The commission will be bipartisan in nature, modeled after the 9/11 commission, and will fully be empowered to undertake a full investigation and make recommendations to the President and to Congress. I can think of no more appropriate path for Congress to follow than by ensuring a bipartisan commission reviews all evidence and reports back to us on this horrific event. Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to insert the text of my amendment in the record, along with extraneous material, immediately prior to the vote on the previous question. With that, I urge a no vote on the previous question. I yield 4 minutes to my good friend, Mr. Davis of Illinois, the ranking Republican member on House Administration, for a further explanation of this amendment.
The gentleman from Illinois is recognized for 4 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I first want to thank the U.S. Capitol Police and the Sergeant-at-Arms employees who were here on the front lines.
We're hearing from Congressman Davis of Illinois.
Last week during the unprecedented attack. It is imperative that we focus on ensuring a safe inauguration day, protecting members and staff during this time of increased threats, and making sure that our Capitol Police officers have the support that they need. We need to ensure that what we saw happen a week ago today never happens again. Yesterday, I introduced, along with Representatives Katko and Comer, a bill that would create a national commission on the domestic terrorist attack upon the United States Capitol. The bipartisan commission would consist of 10 members, 5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, appointed by the next president and by House and Senate leadership. This commission would be tasked with investigating the domestic terrorist attack that occurred in this building just a week ago. And it will provide us recommendations to prevent similar attacks from happening in the future. What we saw last week scared all of us who were here, but it also showed adversaries what it takes to take out a branch of government. When this commission is done with this investigation, it will submit a report to the President and to Congress detailing its findings and recommendations to ensure that no foreign or domestic adversary could accomplish what was done on January 6th. We need to ensure that we fully understand what took place last week and any and all issues that occurred during our response. Republicans and Democrats need to work together. We must unite to prevent any attacks like this from happening in the future, and we must protect this institution, not just for us, for the American people. That's why we should defeat the previous question so that we can establish this bipartisan commission to equip us with the information that we need to support our Capitol Police and the men and women who work in these buildings. And with that, I yield back.
The gentleman yields. The gentleman from Oklahoma reserves. The gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Mr. Speaker, I'm proud to yield 1 minute to the distinguished gentleman from Maryland, the Majority Leader, Mr. Hoyer.
The gentleman from Maryland is recognized for 1 minute.
Denny Hoyer of Maryland.
Thank the Chairman of the Rules Committee for yielding. I congratulate him for his efforts and that of the Rules Committee in acting and acting swiftly. I appreciate the remarks of Mr. Cole, for whom I have great respect, but I disagree with his sense of a lack of urgency in action. I do agree with him of the consequences of our action. There are consequences to actions, and the actions of the President of the United States demand urgent, clear action by the Congress of the United States. The chairman of the committee introduced the remarks and put them in the record. But I want to reference the remarks of the chair of the Republican Conference, which is the analog to the Democratic Caucus. It is all the Republicans elected to the Congress of the United States in the House of Representatives. And they elected Liz Cheney, the daughter of the Vice President of the United States, the former whip of this House, Dick Cheney, with whom I served in the 80s. Representative Cheney from Wyoming, a conservative Republican, said this: "The President of the United States summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack." That is not some irresponsible new member of the Congress of the United States. This is the daughter of the former Republican whip and former Vice President of the United States of America. She knows of what she speaks. And she said this as well: "There has never been a greater betrayal by a president of the United States of his office and his oath of Constitution to the Constitution." This is not, as Liz Cheney says, just some action. She characterizes it as the biggest betrayal of any President of the United States in our history. Mr. John Katko, not a backbench Republican who just got here and doesn't know what's going on. Mr. John Katko, who is the ranking Republican on the Homeland Security Committee, says this: "To allow the President of the United States to incite this attack without consequences is a direct threat to the future of democracy." This is not some backbencher on your side of the aisle, on their side of the aisle, Mr. Speaker. It reflects the sense of outrage, the sense of historic dissimilarity from the actions of any previous president. And then Mr. Adam Kinzinger, member to the NG Commerce Committee, a senior member from Illinois. So I have a member from Wyoming, a member from Illinois, and a member from New York. There will be others on this vote who will join them. And Mr. Kinzinger said this: "If these actions," he hasn't had any hearings, he doesn't need any long, drawn-out consideration. "If these actions are not worthy of impeachment, then what is an impeachable offense?"
There is no doubt in my mind that the President of the United States broke his oath and incited this insurrection. I tell my friend, Mr. Speaker, a gentleman for whom I have great respect, he is my friend, and I say that honestly, not just as rhetoric, as we say on this floor, because there's some that I don't consider friends, whose values I do not share. That is not Mr. Cole. We have a difference. Liz Cheney, John Katko, Adam Kinzinger, and other Republicans whom I have talked to within the last 24 hours believe this action is required. Now, let me say, I see the gentleman from Ohio is on the floor. He likes to say that we Democrats were elected and the first thing we wanted to do was impeach this president. And he's shaking his head in agreement because, like the President of the United States, he denies the facts. Trump-like. Fake news. December 6, 2017. Mr. Green, whom I'm going to refer to, offered a motion because he saw the danger that confronted our country. And he filed a resolution of impeachment. And on December 6, 2017, we had a vote on that. And the majority of Democrats voted no. Actually, they voted yes to table, so that we did not proceed in 2017. The gentleman from Texas, Mr. Green, thought, however, the next year that there was still a danger to our country. Some of us shared that view, but we were not confident that the case could be made or that the transactions that had proceeded would lead to conviction. So on January 19th of 2018, we had a motion to table Mr. Green's resolution. And the majority of Democrats voted to table that resolution. What a rush to judgment. And then on July 17th, 2019, 9 days before the call to Ukraine to get the Ukrainian leader to act on the political behalf of the President of the United States and withheld money to defend the Ukrainian people from Russian involvement, and offered that as a bribe. And on July 17th, the majority of Democrats voted to table that resolution. So, Mr. Speaker, there was no rush to judgment. And then that call to which I just referred was on July 26th, 9 days later. I call that the aha moment. Yes, I knew what I thought, but that was proof. And the gentleman, some gentlemen have lamented that we didn't know the whistleblower, because after all, if we knew the whistleblower, we can intimidate everybody else from coming forward. And this president has done everything he can to intimidate whistleblowers, people who came forward and told the truth. And we had witness after witness after witness who confirmed what the whistleblower brought to our attention. So the reason I rise today, and I'm going to speak on the resolution itself at some later time, is to recognize the contributions that Al Green of Texas has made to getting us to this place. And I just want to, I'm not going to read all the resolution, but I want to read some excerpts from the resolution he has introduced. We won't be considering his resolution. We'll be considering Mr. Cicilline and over 200 others who have signed on to the resolution. Mr. Green had a resolution when introduced, resolved that Donald Trump, President of the United States, is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and the following articles of impeachment be exhibited in the Senate. Article 1 says, in his conduct with the President of the, in his conduct while President of the United States, unmindful of the high duties of his high office and dignity and proprieties thereof, and of the harmony and courtesies necessary for stability, to which my friend spoke, a gentleman from Oklahoma, Donald John Trump, in violation of his constitutional and faith oath faithfully to execute the office of president, has harmed the society of the United States, brought shame and dishonor to the office of the President of the United States, sowing discord among the people of the United States by weaponizing hate for political gain. He went on to say on January 6, 2021, in a speech at the National Mall, President Donald Trump weaponized the hate and resulted in violence, the deaths of multiple people, an assault on democracy, and an insurrection against the capital of the United States of America by inciting a mob. Who said that? Liz Cheney said it, and Al Green said it. Infected with white supremacists, carrying a rebel flag, erecting a gallows structure with a noose, wearing shirts and hateful messages, such as Camp Auschwitz, Work Brings Freedom, and MAGA Civil War, January 6, 2021. MAGA Civil War. They had the hats on of the army of MAGA, which I refer to as Make America Grieve Again. We grieved at Fort Sumter. We grieved on December 7, 1941, and we grieved on 9/11. And yes, we grieved on January 6th of this year. He goes on to say what the president told this mob that Liz Cheney said was recruited by the President of the United States. And I quote, this is the president talking to this mob. All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by a bold and radical left Democrats like the Secretary of State in Georgia and the governor of Georgia, which is what they are doing, and stolen by the fake news media, inciting, riling up, creating anger with the fake news and lies that the President of the United States said to these folks. That is what they have done and what they are doing, the President continued. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. And so what did they do? Incited by this president, as Liz Cheney said, as John Katko said, as Adam Kinzinger said, and frankly, what Secretary Chao acted upon, and what the Secretary of Homeland Security acted upon, and what so many others in the administration have acted upon, disgusted, dismayed, and disheartened by what their president had done. They got out. They quit. The president further emboldened them, saying, this is the green resolution. We're not considering it, but it is the green resolution. The president further emboldened them, saying, you will never take back our country with weakness. We had a display of non-weakness, criminal, insurrection-like conduct, recruited by and deployed by the President of the United States to come to this Capitol and stop the steal. The steal, of course, was we assembled accepting what all the courts that considered it said was a fair and accurate election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as President and Vice President of the United States. After his National Mall speech, a mob of his supporters proceeded to the Capitol complex. We know that. And so Mr. Green's resolution ends with, wherefore, to prevent national harm to our society, Donald John Trump, by such conduct, warrants immediate impeachment trial and removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States Constitution and the 14th Amendment. So in conclusion, Mr. Green is going to speak after me. But in conclusion, Mr. Speaker, let me tell my friend Mr. Cole. I've been here some time. He has as well. I've served with Ronald Reagan, with George H.W. Bush, and George Bush. I had respect for all of those presidents. They cared about our country. They honored our Constitution. And they executed the duties of their office consistent with the Constitution and laws of our country. That is not true of this president. And therefore, he ought to be removed. And we have that opportunity to do so. Is there little time left? Yes. But it is never too late to do the right thing. I yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman from Maryland yields. Gentleman from Massachusetts is recognized.
Speaker, at this point, I'd like to yield 1 minute to the gentleman from Texas, my good friend, Mr. Green.
Gentleman from Texas is recognized for 1 minute.
We just heard from House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer, and we're now hearing from Representative Al Green of Texas.
I had tears well in my eyes as I heard Mr. Hoyer. And I know that hearts are hurting. It's a very sad time in the history of our country. No one is celebrating. No one wants to see this occur. I was at the Rules Committee by way of Zoom. I was there for the entire hearing. Those members on the other side, this is something that they understand and they take seriously. Regardless as to what's said, I could sense that they're hurting too. So I just want to thank everyone for all that has happened and the appreciation that's been shown. And I want to say that the healing that we talk about that has to begin. May I have just 30 seconds?
I yield the gentleman 30 seconds.
Gentleman has additional 30 seconds.
Thank you. The healing, it has to start with some of these people who were there initially, who helped to lay this foundation, 110 people. I want to recognize Maxine Waters, Congresswoman. A lot of them were threatened. Their lives were disrupted. And if I may, with unanimous consent, I'd just like to insert their names in the record.
Without objection.
I thank you, and may God bless our country as we go forward.
Gentleman from Texas yields. Gentleman from Massachusetts reserves. Gentleman from Oklahoma is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I yield 2 minutes to my good friend, distinguished Republican member, our leader of the Budget Committee, Mr. Smith of Missouri.
Gentleman from Missouri is recognized for 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we defeat the previous question, we will amend the rule to immediately bring up the bill establishing a bipartisan national commission on the domestic terror attack of the United States Capitol.
You're listening to the House of Representatives at the U.S. Capitol debating the impeachment of President Trump. This is live special coverage from NPR News.
Right here in this very chamber, while a violent mob laid siege to the seat of American democracy. It is vital we get the facts on what went wrong last week, why the security apparatus failed, and how we can ensure it never It never happens again. Less than 50 feet from where we stand in this room, a young lady lost her life through those doors. Through those doors. I was in this chamber when those gunshots rang. That is real stuff. That should never happen in the people's house. For the first time, can the House Democrats and the Speaker of the House put the people before politics?